And one, and it tells me you're live. So, Mr. Jab, apparently we're live right now. We're live, not 6 feet under, especially after I just fell off a hill and injured myself with that, and hence the extremely late start today because of that issue. But got a nice ankle brace on my left foot. I'm glad it's not my right foot because then I have a hard time driving. But yeah, that's kind of what's been taking up my time today, Mr. Jab. So been pretty interesting on that regard.
What happened, me and Chase were playing King of the Hill, and then we fell down the hill, and I landed on his foot.
Yeah, I mean, we were planning on doing a King of the Hill death match, but instead we decided to settle it with by targeting our outer appendages instead. So it's kind of the direction we want to do that. Yeah, that's right, Rocka.
Finish him.
Yeah, I mean, I was definitely repping the Fulgor suit for sure from Killer Instinct. And we tried to light Jab on fire ahead of time so that he could be Cinder, but it just wasn't working out for us. So
wasn't working. Yeah. Anyway, let's probably move forward with the stream before the people who watch it on YouTube in a week are like, what the fuck with 10 minutes of just fucking conversation?
Yeah, I know.
Yes, we'll be typing Neil deGrasse Tyson. I don't really know what type he is. He's probably abstract because he's always thinking about the future. I'm leaning towards TE user, so maybe an NJ. I'm not sure.
I have no idea. And yeah, the lighting is terrible because this is actually the studio and we're still moving things. And if you notice right over here, that's a soft box. it's not completely, well, let's just say assembled. So trying to do it.
And on a side note, apparently, a very popular member of our community has a birthday today. Happy birthday, Pluto.
Yes, happy birthday.
On that note, let's talk about our methods. So we'll be using the type grid method. You can find the type grid on, what is it, csjoseph.life.
And on the Discord server.
So yeah, with the type grid, we will test concrete versus abstract, affiliative versus pragmatic, systematic versus interest, formative versus direct, responding versus initiating versus responding, movement versus control. And with that, we will also look at the cognitive functions which are being displayed and just use that as a double check method in the end.
Yep.
So obviously today we're doing Neil deGrasse Tyson. For those of you who don't know, he's a astrophysicist for the Interplanetarium or whatever it's called. He always pushes forth science and scientific literacy in schools and whatnot, and is all about, you know, making sure everyone understands science.
Is it wrong, Jab, that I've never actually listened to a single thing he's ever said before, and I have no clue about him other than that I hear about him all the time from people? So
I would say no, but you know, you have had a history of playing internet spaceships online game, so I would say yes.
That's true. Okay, well, fair enough. But yeah, I mean, I don't know anything about this person, and it's probably so. Yeah, I'm coming in with this with a tabula rasa, and honestly, I have no idea how to go about doing this at all. So we'll find out. we'll find out how this goes. Gosh, I love that echo in here, right? Thank God I'm going to have soundproofing pretty soon. So anyway, let's get down to it. And what's our first clip for today, Mr. Dab?
All right, our first clip, I'm going to go with him on the Anthony Cumia show. So those of you who know Opie and Anthony, Anthony from that created his own internet show. And here he is with Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Awesome.
So let's start this.
Dude, what's his name? I'm sorry.
Oh, this Alan Stern.
Alan Stern and the New Horizon.
Yeah, he's the Pluto. Principal investigator of the mission to Pluto. And he just happened to be coming through town, and we know each other so, from way back, actually.
I was sitting with him on the couch, and I thought he was just another guest who was going to watch the show. And he's literally a rocket scientist.
Yeah, literally. And he also has an engineering background, so he wasn't only the pure scientist. He knew how to think about the spacecraft when it was being designed.
These are pro
engineering background. Is that a bit TE? Like credentials?
I don't know, but like I went full on interaction style there with that, and I'm like, whoa, this guy is like direct initiating control, like immediately, you know, just like in the first few seconds, it's like boom, direct initiating control, like right off the bat. I mean, certainly initiating, certainly in your face, seems pretty direct to me, but we'll figure that out as we go forward. So you're saying TE on that one? All right, we'll add that there for sure.
Guy's credentials is like, oh, this is his background, you know, he knows all this shit, look how smart he is.
Yeah,
but yeah,
probes that are going out and taking these amazing pictures. I mean, years ago, I remember as a kid being fascinated by Viking and Voyager. And
you're
all
not that old.
Well, I remember when they were on their way.
There you go.
I remember when they were. It took a while to get there, but very fascinated, and also so like you'd be like, oh, I just wanted a little clearer.
Oh,
I wanted to see a little. And now these pictures that are coming back of Pluto are amazing.
They leave nothing to the imagination.
Yeah.
They used to be able to say, I think that's an alien civilization.
Right.
They used to be able to say,
I don't know.
But yep, no room for that anymore.
High definition, full color. It just looks amazing. Yeah, and when you think of the work that goes into just thinking about it, and then having the results come back and in between, it really kind of makes you have faith again that we're not all stupid people on Twitter. That there's actually amazing things going on.
There's hope for the species.
Right, there's hope for the species, because it just takes an amazing amount of work.
Because
it started decades earlier. Mm-hmm. Somebody has to have a vision. Then you have to convince people that it's got to happen. Then you got to get money for it.
Right.
Then it's going to be Congress or NASA or whatever. Then you got to find the aerospace partners who are going to build the thing. Then you have to figure out what the science case is. Then you got to design we think of the probe as just got some camera. No, it is an object that is clad with scientific instruments. Right. That's what we launch. It's an object.
Right.
And it's got the scientific instruments are attached to it. And that's what flies past Pluto, and you rotate it around, you put things in view.
He's geeking out on the extroverted sensing, mechanical capabilities of that situation, consistently.
Relatively speaking to our minds, it's a very long distance.
Yes, it's a long distance, and in fact, this particular mission was Pluto so far. That if they didn't get it there fast enough, there's a time-honored rule.
Yeah, he does.
It's not written yet. It exists in science. It's whatever is your experiment, it needs to be finished before you die. Okay. So Pluto is so far away, nobody wanted to be dead before the spacecraft arrived.
Right.
So if they shaved as much weight off of it as they could to make it as light as possible, then they gave the most honkering rockets that existed in the arsenal. And that way, it can accelerate quickly.
Yeah.
And so it got to Pluto in record time. And so, yeah, so that's in the calculations. And then we're on a moving object around the sun.
Right.
Pluto is moving around the sun. And now you have a moving object to get from a moving object.
It's always amazing.
So the orbital people have to be involved as well. Some of this was captured in the film Martian. Mm-hmm. Just the number of people and their various expertise that needs to come together to make one thing happen. And have it happen the way you
could.
Expect.
Did you think you could take Martian soil, add some human excrement to it for fertilizer and grow an earthbound plant?
I cannot hear you over the clip.
Would you say that's systematic? Like, he keeps talking about like systems of getting something done.
Yeah, it's not really because you can't necessarily say that because. You know, anyone who's interest-based could still point out a system. Like, it's that much obvious. It's a primary versus a secondary thing. So I'm not entirely sure yet.
Yeah.
But
if you do it twice.
Yeah. But I, mean, I kind of sense a little affiliative when he's starting to talk about the experiments, right? And how, hey, you know, you probably should make sure that your experiment is going to occur when you're alive so that the rest of us can get the benefit of that, right? That was a very affiliative statement, not so pragmatic, basically. No,
wouldn't that be more pragmatic in the sense that it would be affiliative if you died without seeing the results of your experiment, provided other people could get the results, rather it would be pragmatic if you could see the end of your experiment?
Fair enough, but I think from looking at his intention, the intention is for the benefit of others and not the benefit of the individual was how I took it. So, but yes, this is okay. Definitely a hard one. We're going to have fun with this one. So let's do it.
All right.
In Martian soil.
So the thing is Martian soil is not really soil mm-hmm. in the way we think of it. If you reach your hand into the soil of Earth, there's all manner of microbes in there that are part of an ecosystem. And right. Mars has no ecosystem, so it's just dust. And I'm not a farmer, so I don't know if you just put seeds and dust in some poop. Maybe it has to stay in the poop itself. I don't know. I'm just saying, I'm not the botanist.
Right.
Yeah, that's very S-E.
I think it was, whether or not that could happen as described, I think, for the film and the book that preceded it, they did enough science homework
mm-hmm.
that you give them the latitude there.
Give them the benefit of the doubt and we'll enjoy the movie.
People think I just criticize movies to no end. I think I'm misunderstood in this regard.
I think I misunderstood. That's TR.
Mm-hmm.
And are you seeing responding at all? I'm just seeing constant initiating. And he hasn't really, when he's saying what he's talking about, he hasn't been doing it informally. He's not indirect. He's been direct consistently, you know, from what I'm seeing.
I'm seeing a lot of initiating and then like full on movement, like constantly talking and like getting every.
Maybe though, but he could be geeking out in his subconscious, and his subconscious may be a movement side of the mind, which would make sense, I guess. In that situation, mm-hmm. but definitely saying tons of SE, seeing a bit of TI, a little bit of TE, but let's keep going.
Okay.
What are you doing?
Yeah, it's just a movie. Chill out. And I think I misunderstood.
Yeah.
I thought they could have gotten correct, but didn't.
But didn't.
They could have gotten correct, but correct. They didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Those and other things, right. But it's not as interesting to just talk about what a movie that's supposed to get things right got right.
Yeah.
So I picked the things that I thought, and everything I picked was in an attempt to illuminate some law of physics or some thing, so that each tweet that I commented on, I think I would leave you in a new place.
Right, right.
As an educator, that's what I do.
A new place.
Right? The movie. Now, here's my reply
what
to the
I
people
want
say,
to do. He wants to have that engagement. So that's NI. It's very NI.
Right, but he said, as an educator, that's just what I do. It sounds more like a responsibility.
Yeah, but not to the level of like a high SI responsibility. He's more of, I would even say that's an affiliative statement. You know, by
that's what I was, that was where I was going with that. Yeah. It seems like slightly affiliative.
Yeah.
Just a movie? Suppose you're watching the Titanic, right? Mm-hmm. And Leonardo DiCaprio comes out and he's got tie-dyed bell bottoms, right? You would cry foul. You would fire the.
That is optimistic SE. This guy's got optimistic SE.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely.
So what are you thinking?
So definitely SE hero or child. One of the two, for sure. Absolutely, hero or child.
Ooh. Get rid of them, and there are no Academy Awards for costume design there. And you would cry foul. You have auto experts who, if a movie's supposed to take place in 1957 and there's a 1955 Chevy, I mean, it's a 1960 Chevy.
People get angry
because it takes you out of it if you have this expertise. And so people are denying a scientist the same access to commentary as everybody else.
Affiliative. That's so affiliative.
Oh, there's no pragmatic. It's all about. It's not right.
It's not right. Yeah, and making an FE statement there at the same time. Yeah, not fair. TI as well. I want to say this bit, and I definitely seems pessimistic for sure. You know, with SE as optimistic. And I is definitely pessimistic for sure, which would place an I in the parent or the inferior slot for sure.
Right.
A fan of Jane Austen style novels, and there's a movie, and there's a carriage that drives up. It's 19th century,
of course.
And a carriage drives up, and there's the skirt and the whatever that the women wear, and again, if somebody uses some term, some slang from the 1960s,
right,
it takes you out of the moment.
It looks ridiculous.
I'm seeing a lot of control. It takes you out of the moment, like
It's not getting the right outcome. It's not getting the right outcome at all. Yeah.
Oh, look. I'm immersed in this safe situation where I'm like immersed in this movie, and then control is lost because they got something wrong.
Exactly. Which is also a TI statement. It's a criticism. It's a TI criticism at the same time. And then getting it wrong, pointing out that this is ethically a wrong thing. It's not right as a result of this TI fact. So TIFE, SENI for sure. Wow. The audience might, it's looking like the audience might actually be right on this one. Let's keep going for sure. Let's actually switch to another clip and try to debunk some of the things. Sure.
I think the perception of him talking fast and me initially thinking it was movement was actually him just trying to control the conversation by him talking as much as possible. That allows him to control the conversation. So it's an aspect of control, actually.
Yeah, my father has an optimistic SE hero and child, and he has a pessimistic introvert intuition. So he does the same thing. He'll just dominate the conversation in that way to maintain control because he's trying to get the outcome that he's looking for consistently. That's definitely a thing. So yeah, let's do another clip, get him in a different element, see if we can find out more.
Right. Okay. Here we go.
Bring it on. Accept facts and belief. I know the religious people believe, the scientist has proved. What do you believe? What do you think happens?
Ooh, we're going to see whether it's abstract or concrete here.
Oh, yeah, let's do it.
When we die.
Well, so I can make some saleable statements about what happens when you die. So you spend your life eating food. Food has a calorie content, and calorie is a source of energy. Calorie is a unit of energy. You bring it in, and then the energy is available for you to maintain your body temperature at nearly 100 degrees. It's 98.6. How do you keep something at 100 degrees when nothing else around you is? You're burning energy to sustain that, because biologically, we need to be at that temperature to function, okay? You also need energy to walk and to move. That's why you eat food.
That's why you eat food. Nice TI pessimistic statement.
This is a little concrete, but I think it's a little bit of an anecdote for something bigger. So we'll keep going.
Yeah, for sure.
Maintain the energy. Your temperature drops. How far does it drop? To room temperature. At a funeral in the casket, if you touch the hand of the person in the casket, your first thought is, the body's cold. No, it's not. It's room temperature. But it's cold compared to 100 degrees. They're no longer burning this energy. Okay, so now.
Very direct.
Every one of your bodies has energy within it.
Yeah, direct. And
he's so controlled there. It's like, controlled.
If you get cremated, that energy gets released in the form of heat, and you heat the air, and that air radiates to space. You get buried, which is how I want my body to be disposed of. Bury me.
You got an NI there.
NI, and that's also,
a bit pessimistic.
Yeah.
Bury me, because you know why? I don't want the energy content of my body to just get radiated out into space of no use to anybody. Put me in the ground. Let the worms, microbes, come in and out of my body. And the energy content of my body that I had assembled.
The energy content of my body. That's an abstract statement. Yes. Here you go.
Oh. I'm not sure about that. I think he's being concrete so far, but he doesn't strike me as a concrete type.
No. Well, the reason why I'm saying that is because he's talking about the future. What will happen? He's not necessarily like he's taking us through an abstract story of what will happen later. It's not about what's happening right now or what has happened, because he's talking about the what if him dying and being in the ground and the worms and all that. That's not actually like real, or that's not something tangible. It's an abstract concept, which is why I'm leaning that direction.
Right. Okay.
My body then returns to them, and thus is the cycle of life.
That's abstract.
Measure where the energy goes. And that's how I want to go out.
But you're not conscious, and that's for eternity, right?
There's no evidence that I have any consciousness of anything. And by the way, is that so weird? Did you have consciousness before you were born? Were you saying, how come I'm not on Earth? My gosh, I need to be on Earth. Or where am I? No, there's just the state of non-existence.
But now I am born, and I can't stand the thought of non-existence. See, I already have existence.
It is true. We fear death because we are born knowing only life.
Right.
I get that. However, I take abstract as well.
Yeah, like I think he started off with a bunch of concrete statements as a foundation to make these abstract arguments.
Exactly.
If you could live forever, would you?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. No, okay, sure, that's an attractive idea. But the way I look at it is the knowledge that I'm going to die that creates the focus that I bring to being alive.
Yes. Very NI statement talking about the focus. And the focus itself is abstract.
Now, not later.
Yeah.
If we live forever.
And he's talking about, I think that's an attractive statement. You know, that's actually interest-based. That's an interest-based statement, because it's like, okay, well, what's in it for me, right? What's in it for you? You know, this life thing. You know, constantly going in that direction. That's the interest argument.
That's not the kind of life I want to lead.
But why don't you fear?
Audio alert.
All right. Audio's been fixed. Thank you.
Not being around?
I fear living a life where I could have accomplished something and didn't. That's what I fear. I don't fear death.
You don't fear the unknown?
I love the unknown. I love the. You know what I want on my tombstone? My sister has this in her notes, because in case I can't tell anyone after I die. On my tombstone, a quote from Horace Mann, great educator. Be ashamed to die until you have scored some victory for humanity.
Oh, that's very interest-based. Yeah, that's affiliative as well. And it's abstract. Yeah, we know it's temperament.
Not being around.
My great regret for not being around would be kind of cool to see my kids continue to grow.
Don't you want
to
know?
Let's go to the next clip. Let's jump there.
What would you rather, Joe Rogan or Stephen Colbert?
Stephen Colbert, for sure. Let's see what the ENTP has to say.
Okay.
Beautiful. I love the stars.
Just for you, my friend. Just for you.
Love what you've done with the place.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Now, you know, on the old gig over on the other network, you were the guest I had more than any other guest.
Really?
Yeah, you were there. You know that.
Could it be that I live nearby? Date?
Could it be we moved the studio someplace close to you so we could be near you, Neil? I just found out that you're also you're holding a vast lead on anybody else on this show. You've been on 9 times. Do you know number 2 is?
No.
John Oliver. That's 6. 6. Yeah. Anyway, so
the universe is vaster than anything else in the universe.
What? What does that mean? Don't pre-blow my mind. Don't pre-blow my mind before I'm ready for it. We got
audio. Wow. Hold on.
Yeah. I'm going to try to fix that here.
Why does it keep happening?
Not sure. I am adjusting my settings. All right. Can you still hear me? Can you hear me? All right, Jab, you there? I think I lost Jab. Good times, you know, doing our first, Jab got cut off. 1 second. Go. All right. Save Jab. We'd save Jab. That's what happens fixed? When you're doing. Yeah, I think it's fixed now.
Hmm. I don't know what's causing that. I've had that.
I don't
issue
know either. Like we're like this is a new location, a new studio. So we don't have all the kinks worked out yet, but we'll get that figured out pretty soon. Thank you to the audience for dealing with that. Yeah, let's continue.
Pop it out later.
Yeah.
This intermission.
A lot in the universe to talk about.
Okay. So
relative
sure
to
is.
Anything else in the universe.
First of all, Happy New Year.
Thank you. Happy New Year to you.
Now, does the New Year have any particular astronomical significance?
No.
No, why not?
No, not.
We've gone around the sun, right? We've gone around the sun once.
Yeah, that's but something. The place where that we return to, there's nothing special or interesting about it. It's a completely arbitrary spot on the calendar that we have chosen to celebrate the new year. Plus, I think it's a little weird that we all celebrate that instant that the ball drops, and then 1 hour later, they celebrate exactly the same thing. And then an hour later, they do that 24 times around the world.
I know how clocks work, Neil.
The world is not celebrating the same moment. It's kind of, it's odd to me as an astrophysicist, but that's fine. It's culture, that's how we do it.
Could you be more Neil deGrasse?
How we do it.
What do you mean? So,
no, if we all
you
had
live,
this.
You live to suck the joy out of other people's traditions. What is worth celebrating? If it's not New Year's,
almost every other holiday in the year has some astronomical basis. The Chinese New Year, the Jewish New Year, Ramadan, Easter, Lent,
Toyota-thon. All of it.
There's something go. You know, Saturnalia. Christmas.
What is Saturnalia?
Saturnalia. It's back in the winter.
Yeah.
Where you want to. The sun is getting lower and lower in the sky each day.
Yeah.
And you worry that maybe it'll never come back.
Oh.
And so then.
Is Saturn getting higher in the sky?
Well, no, but Saturn is the god that you pray to and celebrate. And Saturnalia is where everything flips. So the master serves the slave gives commands.
Oh, okay.
It's an interesting Roman tradition that is long gone.
All right.
But I'm just saying it's in that time of the year where the sun is basically reborn. So it's solstice celebrations. And Christmas was put there to be a good place to sort of bring in all the pagan worshipers who were already celebrating that time of year.
And it worked.
Yeah, it worked.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
We won. Now, okay, so 2018, what's got you excited for 2018? What are you talking about?
That's right.
What's got you excited for 2018?
Not only won, wait, just to be clear.
Okay.
Not only won there.
Yeah.
You won the calendar race, too.
Huh?
The world's calendar is the Gregorian calendar after Pope Gregory. Into place in 1582. Because the previous Julian calendar was messing up in the year.
It was off by like
10 days.
Okay.
It was off by 10 days.
Yeah.
And the Pope said, we got to fix this. So
the Pope fixed it.
Pope! Well, Pope, his Jesuit scientists.
Okay.
The Jesuit priests were like the academic order of the Catholic. You're Catholic. You should be teaching this. Okay.
You should know this.
You should know this. See.
Yeah.
It's very, very interest-based on that. I especially enjoyed his Saturnalia comments. That was excellent. So let's look at what we have so far, actually, and look at the things. So from a Quadra standpoint, T-I-F-E-S-E-N-I, which basically means he's automatically an STP slash NFJ just from the Quadra analysis up here. And then we noted optimistic hero and child for SE, pessimistic NI for parent and inferior. So the only ones that would do that would be these. But what matches the STP NFJ? Well, technically the ESTP ENFJ does. They're also both direct initiating control. So it's between ESTP and ENFJ based on this data. But when we take into account the temperament and the interaction style, well, the interaction style, direct initiating control, it's the same for ESTP and ENFJ. So at that point, we have no choice but to defer to the temperament analysis, which is abstract, affiliative, and interest, which means he is an NF, aka an idealist, which means ENFJ is the clear winner, which also matches what the audience has this evening as well, just based off of that. So what does that mean? Like, what does that mean? TI inferior, he's got a very well-developed TI inferior. He can go in and out of his subconscious like crazy. I guarantee you TI inferior gets off on the fact that he has the title astrophysicist so that he can go into his ISTP a subconscious on a regular basis and really aspire with that ISTP subconscious in anything and everything he does, right? And as a result, he's a very subconscious focused ENFJ. I'm not really seeing him very, you know, into the, like the shadow with his INFP side, not very much, you know, and because he's so focused with his SE child on the concrete things of the universe with how he, and then he explains the abstract concepts after that with his NI parent, basically. And that's generally the process he seems to be following, you know. And while the audience would note, yes, he talks a lot, he was talking really fast, he seemed informative, but he wasn't really informative. He wasn't telling those stories. He wasn't being indirect. If you actually just broke down the words of what he was saying, he was actually being very direct and very directive, right? And he was choosing his role in the conversation. He wasn't allowing a third party to choose his role in the conversation, even though he was being interviewed. Hence why, you know, it was a direct concept. So what do you think, Jeb, based on what we have?
Yeah, I mean, I initially get the perception that he might have been movement at the start, but then I realized that him just talking a lot and like trying to get all the information in was just a combination of him being direct and trying to control the pace of the conversation. So it was actually right. An indicator of control and direct. Going back to the direct, him just trying to get as much information out there as possible. None of it was actually informative.
Yeah.
I don't think I saw a single pragmatic statement from him. Like,
no, not even remotely. It's very societal. Yeah,
what he needed to
scientific like, authority. That he was really big on scientific authority.
Right. Yeah, definitely agree with the temperament analysis. There was so much SE from him. You got to give him some props on the development of that TI as a TI inferior.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty good. Mad props to this guy for his development. Maybe he should work a little bit on his shadow. Didn't see much of that.
Yeah,
but yeah, I would.
But like I said, he's very subconscious focused, and I guess that's where does he live exactly? Do we know? Do you know where he's from? Like,
oof. I think he's in LA right now or something.
He's in LA. Do we know where he was born? Let's look that up real quick.
He was born in New York.
New Yorker. Fair enough. Yeah. I mean, it's really interesting to see a subconscious focused ENFJ, especially born and raised in our culture. And it's a breath of fresh air to see it. This guy. He's happy. Like you could tell, like this guy is happy, and it's because he's in his subconscious on a regular basis, aspiring with his ISTP and literally seeing the world through the lens of the ISTP. It's like his ISTP subconscious is this microscope that he's like put the universe under, and he's constantly analyzing it. And then he's drawing abstract concepts with it and then teaching it to other people. He said with his own words, how it, what he does as, you know, as an astrophysicist, and his responsibility from a very affiliative point of view is to teach others and teach others about these concepts. Because, you know, he is the mentor. The ENFJ is the mentor. But the ENFJ can be pretty brilliant with, you know, physics because of how physics-oriented the ISTP subconscious is as he develops it. And although it's very interesting, because if you think about it, his INFP shadow, which you'd think he'd have like a nice core interpersonal philosophy that he'd be trying to teach others, the philosophy that he has is the philosophy of reality. That's why he's saying, you know, I don't really care about these religious belief systems right now because I'm not seeing it in the physics, because he's not really valuing metaphysics as much as he's valuing the physics. He looks at the physics first and then he draws his abstract concepts from there, but then it's not very metaphysical. You see what I'm saying? So that's why he's very NI focused, very SE focused, and really staying away from the SI and the NE, which would make sense because his SI is a trickster. It's literally a black hole. His personal experience is literally a black hole. And his whole focus is on, okay, what is happening right now with the physical environment? What is happening here for us to focus in this way? What is happening, you know? And then as a result of that, he's actually getting to a point where, hey, you know, if I'm not seeing it right before my eyes, because like seeing is believing and believing is seeing. That's the common NFJ point of view. Like NFJs have that point of view, and it's probably because the NFPs are egging them on to have that point of view. Let's be honest. And because NFJs are idealistic in that way, he's trying to seek and search his ideals as a result of his analysis of physics, right? With his expert sensing child. And he's just not finding the answers to those questions. So TI inferior is just like, nope. But if his TI inferior is more metaphysical, he'd be more like an ESFJ and actually have those faith-based beliefs, because the SI is much higher in the ego instead of in the shadow side of his mind, right? So think about that, audience. Understand something. Utilize Neil deGrasse Tyson specifically as a model to show you, you know, just how this SE child and this SI trickster is translating to, like, I guess an atheistic point of view. I don't know exactly what the label is that we could attach to it.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I can hear myself there for a second.
Sorry, my bad. Just take a seat back.
So still can hear myself.
What?
Audio engine again. So yeah, anyway, so for tonight's How to Type episode, Neil deGrasse Tyson edition, as I hear myself again, our final judgment. Our final judgment, he is an ENFJ, which interestingly enough, agreed with the majority of the audience. So good job, guys. I had no expectations of going into this whatsoever. I have no idea. But yeah, definitely looks like ENFJ here. Good job. You guys are doing fantastic. Keep mastering that type grid. And also, season 17, we're two episodes of season 16. As soon as season 16 is over, we're going to be doing season 17. We're going to be talking and adding additional techniques that we'll be doing on this board specifically for identifying someone's type, et cetera. So just be aware of that. We're going to be kind of upgrading this section up here, and we're going to be adding another section down here that we're going to be keeping track of. So just be aware of that. Those methodologies will be added to our type grid document, and we're going to be adding a glossary. About damn time. So that is coming. Look for that to be released during season 17. It's just around the corner as I attempt to get my studio built here and have better quality everything. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. With regards to that, are we going to have a change in schedule?
Yes, we are going to have a change in schedule. Yeah, it would probably be a good idea. We're going to be moving the Q&A sessions to Saturdays or Sundays, likely Saturdays, because we want to get the European crowd in there and get them the chance to get their questions answered. And as far as how to type, that may be moved to another night as well. But we're just going to be making sure that the Q&A session is going to be made available to Europeans on a regular basis. And are we going to be starting that this week, Jab? Or are we doing that the following week? What do you think?
I mean, we're a little bit behind in questions. So what we could do is a Q&A session on Thursday and then another one on the Saturday.
Yeah, we might do that. We might actually double up on Q&A because we actually technically missed a Q&A session as well. So thank you, Amal, for stating that he's an agnostic. I appreciate you pointing that out.
Yeah, very abstract thing to say. I don't know if there is.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough. All right, cool. Well, thank you all. Have a good night. We'll see you this Thursday for the next Q&A session, and we'll let you know when the schedule changes for Q&A. And I don't know if we're going to change how to type, but probably how to type maybe move to Sundays, and we just may have weekend broadcasts for live streams. And then during the week, we'll have just regular lectures going out, which is likely what's going to end up happening. So stay tuned, and we'll get all that to you. Thank you all for being awesome and for your mercy with our sound issues and the fact that, you know, we're building a studio here. And it's very echoey and whatnot. So cool. Otherwise, you all have a good night. And sorry it's like 5 a.m., but, I mean, it is what it is.
So. Yeah. Sorry, ladies and gents. Hopefully these Saturday Q&A sessions won't be as bad.
Yeah, I know, right? All right, we'll see you then. Have a good night.